Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Truma. This week, Rabbi Howard Marcos discusses Truma. Rabbi Howard Marcos is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Howard Marcos.
Thank you, Larry. As you all probably know, the theme for this month's podcast is conflict resolution, owing to the fact that the 9th of Adar and the days surrounding it, specifically February 12th through the 18th this year, have been deemed the Jewish Week of Constructive Conflict, being promoted by Pardes as well as by many other institutions in Israel and around the world. What is clear in this world of ours is that conflict most certainly exists. The question that remains is how we as Jews and as human beings can address the inevitable presence of conflict constructively so that there might be an emergence of growth and appreciation for others instead of resentment, distrust, and anger. While much of the programming for this week of constructive conflict is taking place in the school milieu, I can think of no better place to serve as a laboratory to address issues of conflict than in one's own home. After all, when we are living in a house, we are often living with people with whom we must interact every day, with whom we must come in close contact on a regular basis, and with whom we must share TV time, bathroom time, and as children, parent time, and often sibling time as well. Of course, this description does not necessarily pertain to everyone, but I will tell you that for me personally, members of my family continue to comprise the most important human beings in my life, and in my desire to enjoy quality time with them when I'm not working, it seems that our togetherness is likely to be the source of both nachas and, at times, conflict. So how is it possible to learn with you something about family and family dynamics while referencing this week's Torah portion, Parshat Truma, which deals exclusively with the construction and beautification of the Mishkan, the holy tabernacle wherein God would make his eternal presence known to the entire Israelite nation? One might think that there's absolutely nothing said about family in our parasha this week. But amazingly enough, there are three rather interesting references to family in our Torah portion, Truma, and I would like to discuss them with you today. When referring to the cover of the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu is instructed to have cherubim hammered on both sides of the cover, facing each other. Our tradition tells us that a cherub, karuv in Hebrew, is a creature with bird-like, lion-like, and human-like features. Rashi, quoting the Talmud, Tractate Sukkah, informs us that demut partsuf tinoklahem, the faces on the human-like portion of this cherub, possess an image like the face of a baby. The text in our parasha, Sefer Shmot, chapter 25, verse 20 tells us, V'hayu hakeruvim porsei chnafaim lemala, sochichim bechanfehem al hakaporet, ufnehem ish el achiv el hakaporet, yiyu penei hakeruvim. Translation, the cherubim shall have their wings spread out above, shielding the cover with their wings. They shall confront each other, the faces of the cherubim being turned toward the cover. What's interesting here is that the confrontation in this verse is described in Hebrew with the words ish el achiv, literally man to his brother. Moreover, this is the only time in the entire Torah where those words ish el achiv are not referring to actual people, but rather to inanimate objects gracing the top of the tabernacle in our case. Let's consider for a moment the fact that the description of how these beings called cherubim must be set up places them such that they face each other in confrontation, as the text reports, man to his brother. This is family that is being referred to here, in a context in which two cherubs are to be staring ish el achiv at each other as if in confrontation. And just as an essential part of the holiest place in the wandering family of Israelites is an image of confrontation, which includes the face of a baby, so too, beginning at a very young age, might we acknowledge that even the most stable home will have hovering over it some level of disagreement. We know that children naturally test the limits of their parents all the time. What is interesting is that the testing of limits in a family can create space not only for confrontation, but also for healthy communication and negotiation, tools which people desperately need as they move from childhood to adulthood. The little boy who schemes to take an extra piece of chocolate at Kiddush on Shabbat morning, even though he has been told that he has reached his limit of chocolate, and gets caught and has to put the candy back, might be the teenager who successfully learns to use convincing words that are logical and respectful when he desires to keep the car past curfew on his 17th birthday. Confrontation does not have to be a power struggle between a man and his brother. Rather, it is an opportunity to look into one another's eyes, communicate thoughts and feelings, and negotiate in a way that in some way benefits each party. Even so, we are not born with the ability to handle confrontation as illustrated by the Keruvim. It is a skill that must be learned. The Keruvim, which we learn in Parshat Truma, ornament the Mishkan and are mentioned for the first time in our Torah when Adam and Eve are evicted from the Garden of Eden. We are told that upon being banished from the garden, Vayigaresh et ha'adam, Vayashken mikedem legan Eden et ha'kruvim, ve'et lahat ha'cherev, ha'mithapechet lishmor et derech etz ha'chaim. He, God, drove the man out and stationed east of the Garden of Eden the cherubim and the fiery ever-turning sword to guard the way to the tree of life. This report of the banishment, combined with the cherubim and the constantly revolving sword, provides an excellent image to depict a couple's loss of innocence, as well as a realization that from that moment on, these two people, Adam and Eve, would have to take full responsibility for the decisions that they make, many of which are likely to be a double-edged sword lacking perfection. Thus, when we think of the cherub, we can see both the childlike features of this being, representing the beginnings of testing limits through confrontation and subsequent negotiation, as well as recall the eviction from the Garden of Eden with the message that there are indeed consequences that result from our making choices. We can consider that in our clashes with others, we must be willing to be as accepting as a naive child, as well as accountable as adults for our words and for our actions, beginning with the family and extending to other places in our lives. This phraseology, ish el achiv, might be considered unusual, but not so significant, were it not for the second reference to members of family in our parasha. The Mishkan was to have a curtain made up of 10 pieces of cloth, eser yeriot, in front of it, from where we derive our time-honored tradition to have a curtain in front of the Sefer Torah, which is kept safely in the Ark, the Aron Kodesh, in the synagogue. We read in chapter 26, verse 3, of Sefer Shmot, how those 10 pieces of cloth are to be used. Chamesh hayiriot tiyena chovrot isha el achotah, v'chamesh yiriot chovrot isha el achotah. 5 of the cloths shall be joined to one another, and the other 5 cloths shall be joined to one another. This time, because the word yiriyot, meaning curtain, is feminine, the terminology of the strips of cloth being joined together is isha el achota, woman to her sister. And as was the case with the previous term, this is the only place in the Torah in which these words do not refer to actual people, but instead, once again, relate to inanimate objects. The cloth which makes up the curtain used to cover and protect the Ark of the Covenant can certainly remind us of a curtain that is used in a home to protect one's privacy. As a child gets older, she comes to covet greater privacy and independence, for which she must fight within her home space. What is interesting about a curtain, though, is that while it is designed to protect a person's privacy, it is constructed in a way that at times it is to be pulled to the side, revealing the treasures within. In other words, our desire for privacy must be tempered with a willingness to allow others in so that they can benefit from our care, sensitivity, and concern. Once again, there are two aspects to this part of our image within family dynamics. One is the insistence that members of the family be given their privacy, space which is free from encroachment. On the other hand, while it might be fine to have alone time and cherish one's privacy, the curtain which is fastened isha el achotah, each woman to her sister, is one that at times must be pulled aside to allow for sharing, communicating, and mutual support. The first reference using the language of family depicted two cherubim confronting one another. The second reference calls for the strips of cloth to be joined together in order to make curtains covering the tabernacle. Like these curtains, members of a family have to touch, to interact, to be an intricate part of one another's lives, which might, of course, be a source of friction. But even so, that place of friction can also serve as the source of open and constructive communication between family members. I have one more, what I would call family references, in the language of our Torah portion this week. First, we are commanded to place cherubim on the top of the ark, facing each other as if in conflict. Then the strips of cloth that cover the ark are to be fastened together, creating an opportunity for privacy, as well as advancing unavoidable connection. Finally, when speaking of the boards that are to bolster the corners of the tent of meeting, we are told in chapter 26, beginning at verse 24, V'yiyu to'amim milamata v'yachda v'yiyu tamim al rosho el hataba'at ha'echat ken yiyeh lishnehem lishne hamikzo'ot yihiyu. They shall match at the bottom and terminate alike at the top of inside one ring. Thus shall it be with both of them. They shall form the two corners. This is the translation that's provided by the Jewish Publication Society. But were you to have looked this verse up in a standard Chumash, you might have found a couple of interesting phenomena regarding this description of the planks used to reinforce the tabernacle. First of all, as I read the verse, the second word is pronounced to'amim, which JPS translates as match, and which comes from the root taf aleph mem, to be double, whence the more common word te'omim, meaning twins. We are actually told that they shall match at the bottom, and this means that they should be to'amim, like twins, exactly the same. And the verse goes on to say that in a like manner, terminated on the top, tamim, which might be a fine reading if the text did not state explicitly that it was in like manner that these planks needed to be constructed. Rashi comments, they shall be constructed kimo te'omim, that the wooden planks shall be like twins, exactly the same, which prompted me to do some investigating, and sure enough, the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Tanakh, actually has the word te'omim, twins, instead of tamim, terminate, in its translation of this portion of the verse. Now, it's possible that the translators of the Septuagint were as troubled as I regarding the formulation of the verse and offered an aleph into the word to amend the reading to try and have it make more sense. Or that some early transcribing of the text found the aleph left out. These things happen. An aleph in the word to'omim might drop because it is so weakly pronounced. Please look, for example, at the beginning of Parshat Toldot, Bereshit, Genesis chapter 5, chapter 25, beginning at verse 24, in which God is informing a pregnant Rebekah and concerned Isaac that Rebekah has two boys in her womb, twins. Vayimlu'u yameha laledet, vihine tomim bevitna. When her time to give birth was at hand, there were twins in her womb. Twins, to'omim, is actually written without the aleph. But whatever the reason for this alternate spelling of twins in Bereshit, I submit to you that we can take the identical reading and apply it to our verse in Shmot, concluding that the planks are to be like twins, to'omim, looking exactly alike and acting in the same manner as they support the Mishkan. And twins are another family phenomenon which has the potential of creating conflict as the two, beginning from their time in their mother's womb, are vying for the same space and later the same attention, the same resources in the family. This is what is meant when Rebecca feels that the children are struggling in her womb. The to'omim, the twin boards that were used to reinforce the tent of meeting above and below, while inanimate in our text, still hint at a familial reference. The physical pieces and their meticulous arrangement in the Mishkan was in order to create and maintain strength and stability in the holiest part of the tabernacle, the tent of meeting. Kohelet, in chapter 4, verse 10, teaches us, Tovim hashnaim min ha'echad, ki im yipolu ha'echad yakim et chaveiro. Two are better off than one, for should they fall, one can give support to the other. This description, then, provides for us a way to understand the value of partnership, whether in our homes, in our places of employment, or in our communities. There is an immeasurable amount of benefit that comes from the give and take created by the exchange of two people, including dispute, machloket. Here at Pardes, the emphasis on chevruta learning is a great illustration of how two can be better off than one in sharing insights as well as allowing for disagreement regarding a section of Talmud or Torah. So whether the relationship is ish et achiv, a man and his brother, isha et achota, a woman and her sister, or te'omim, twins, just as the different parts of the Mishkan, the tabernacle come together best when the relationship between the pieces is solid, so too may our lives, in the spirit of facing conflict, in hopes of finding resolution, have the same solid structure to be a place in which God chooses to dwell, as it is written in the opening verses of our parasha, V'asuli mikdash v'shachanti v'tocham. Let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell in their midst.
Thank you, Rabbi Marcos. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.